on this call this evening. Before I put this on mute, we have about a minute. Does anybody have a question they'd like to make sure that I cover this evening? Well, we welcome you to the call. I'm going to go ahead and put this on mute now, and tonight we're going to be talking about discipline and structure. We'll be starting in just about a minute. Okay, we're just about 30 seconds away. Starting the broadcast on the video. Our broadcast is live. We're just a few moments away. And there it is, 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock Mountain Time in Utah. It's so good to have you here with us tonight to participate in this celebration of life. So good to be with you each Tuesday night and reflect on these principles. I'd like to spend just a moment and to share with you some thoughts that I've had over the last few days. Had the privilege of traveling to Atlanta this last week and speaking to some wonderful people and sharing these principles and talking about what's really most important in our lives. And we shared some tears and some laughter, because sometimes we just need to laugh at ourselves, because we can be really comical when we're trying to take on our lives. The thought that I've had tonight, and I think it's so important for us to pause for a moment and realize this isn't about being perfect as we talk about these principles. It's doing them with excellence. It's about increasing our level of awareness, being more aware in the moment how we're showing up, more aware in the moment of what we're thinking, and the impact it might be having on those with whom we are associating. There'll be times when that awareness will come after the fact, and we're going to be talking about some thought processes tonight that quite often we become aware of them after the fact, and as best as quickly as we can to go into damage control. Sometimes we'll hear these thoughts in the middle of a conversation, and we'll want to just stop and acknowledge what's happening and change them. If we're studying a scroll three times a day and we're doing power sessions, we could occasionally preemptively take over and be prepared for these moments. It's not always going to be the case. It's so important that we don't compound the dialogue that some of these self-esteem thoughts might have and beat ourselves up when we fall short. We want to focus on those times where we have successes, where we choose to listen differently, to step into somebody's world, to take down a wall of resistance, to care about somebody. We're going to want to focus on those moments when we consciously say, not going there today. We catch ourselves in one of those moments where that vacuum cleaner over here, this monstrous vacuum cleaner on the left, just wants to suck us right down into that dungeon of despair and discouragement. And we consciously choose not to go there. And we consciously choose to engage in one of the five constructive ways of thinking. I'm just pondering. We've just finished the book. Oh, it's so exciting to have my part of it done. Now hand it off into the hands of professionals, and so many of you have participated in reading it and giving me comments so that we can correct typos, etc. I can think of many times during this process over the last 4 years when it's 4 o'clock in the morning or 4:30 and I'm lying there and I'm going, not going there today. Get re-engaged and go take on that which is most important. The one thing that always is true is when we focus on constructive thought, mental rehearsal, and seeking inspiration and exploration and planning and goal setting and problem solving, the one thing that's always true is we feel better about ourselves. we start to receive inspired ideas. We act on them, and we start to feel more connected with that force of creation that I call God. The more often we can make this choice to not go there today, and we're going to deal with some of those thought processes today that want to yank us down into that dark dungeon. The last week we talked about power sessions. Had a wonderful session with a client just a few moments ago, about an hour ago, and we were talking about power sessions. How did you do this last week? Were you able to choose three times a day, just for 1 hour, when you could stay fully present in the now? I still remember vividly, 2003, Sunday afternoon, sitting in the living room, reading Og Scroll number 4, about keeping our family and our business separated, when this idea was born. I want you to know, if you struggled this week, that the first week I did this was so difficult. And it took nearly a year before we had a client take this on. I thought, am I the only one? No, everyone, at least everyone we were coaching, was struggling staying present just three times a day. That tells us volumes about what is happening in our mind. Our body is always fully present. We're always here. We go to sleep with our body. We wake up with our body. We eat. We recreate. We work. Even when we're unconscious in a hospital, our body is still there. But most of the time, our mind is somewhere else. It's in the past, lamenting past mistakes, or in the future, fantasizing or tormenting ourselves over things that may never come to pass. It's an invitation to begin a journey. Last week wasn't an indictment. It was just an opportunity to take a look. How difficult has it been to stay present in the now for 1 hour at a time, three times a day? You might even write it down on a piece of paper. Was it easy, difficult, hard, impossible? Because tonight we're going to take on the thought processes that show up, that talk us out of actually doing that, so we can begin the process of taking them on. As we do so, it'll become increasingly easier, I should say, to be able to do power sessions. The truth of the matter is this. If we want to intentionally create our life, intentional creation occurs when we are in our mind, on purpose, in constructive thought, vividly visualizing possibilities and receiving inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems that ignite our passion. Creation occurs when we bring that insight into the present and with passion create in tangible reality that which we have seen so clearly in our mind. That really is the essence. We can spend more time on, okay, when I'm in fantasy, I'm trying to escape. I want ease. I want to avoid. When I'm in intentional creation, I want to engage and embrace and connect and create. That's important. I want to focus on blessing the lives of other people. That's important. But little happens until we are here, present in the now. Like Eckhart Tolle said, wherever you are, be there. I think that's what he said. Be there. Be here in the now. I think Ramona's trying to help me with the quote. Pardon? Be there totally. Thank you. Be there totally, meaning body and mind. Well, we'd like to welcome all of those who are with us tonight for the first time. Pull out a paper and a pen. This is an opportunity to step back from our thought processes and take a look and see what's happening. If we are not experiencing those things we would like to have in our lives, it might be because we're not intentionally creating them. And we're going to take on some thought processes tonight that just want to hammer on us and keep us from doing so. So let's write down these thought processes so they're clear in our minds. The very first one, they're all on the left-hand side of your assessment results. The very first one is called discipline. Now, this is a measurement that helps us determine whether or not our thought processes value structure. Do they value structure, and intrinsically value structure? Many on the phone are entrepreneurial in nature, and it's very likely that your thought process does not support structure, unless it's yours. It wants to think outside the box. It wants to be creative. And that can actually serve you at a very high level. Couple of risks. One, once you decide how that ought to look, that box, you may want everybody in your box and need to be right that this is the right box. So just put a smile and say, wow, do I ever need to be right about my box? This is the way it needs to be done. This is the way we clean a house. This is the way we do prospecting. This is the way we should run our systems. Whatever it might be, are we locked into the box? Staggering statistic. 99.5% of all of those who are wanting more with their lives, they're trying to create something more with their lives, 99.5% have this thought process out of balance. That's a lot. It also tells us something that's wonderful to know. When someone tries to impose structure on us, and it raises the hair up on the back of our neck, just know that when we try to impose it on someone else, there's a very good chance we're raising the hair up on the back of their neck. When we want to share ideas, and we'll talk later about finding good in other people's ideas, this is an opportunity for us to share ideas from a more practical standpoint. In other words, the reason why we want to do it this way is for these practical reasons. This is how it could bless your life. We have a tendency to share rules in terms of right and wrong and win and lose and black and white and all and nothing and life and death. Do it my way. Make your first million my way. Make your second million your way. My way, the highway. We have that risk. That's disciplined. The next measurement is teachable. Now, it's interesting when people take the assessment. If they don't click on and listen to the message, they look at the name and they say, I'm teachable. This isn't am I or am I not teachable. It's a name we've given to this characteristic. And the characteristic, from a mathematical perspective, asks this question. Can we honor someone who's in a position of authority? Do we see the practical benefits of following their instruction? Most entrepreneurs don't. They only follow somebody who makes sense. They don't just surrender to a person just because they're in a position of authority. That's common for an entrepreneur. Now, if your measurement and your assessment is red, just know there's probably a good chance if you were to focus and say, was there ever a time in my life when someone was trying to control me? And when I finally broke free, I made a solemn oath to myself that no one would ever do that again. If your measurement's red, see if you can identify a time when that might have occurred. Because when it turns red, our risk is that we may dismiss advice just because the way in which someone presents it, the tone of their voice, the way they say it, we may miss the value of the information because of the way in which the person attempts to share that information. So just watch that if it's red. The third one, we just have a couple more I want to cover with you tonight, is analytical. We see this one red and orange all the time, especially amongst entrepreneurs, constantly, obsessively thinking about new and better ways to do things. Well, thinking about new and better ways to do things is a great thing. Obsessively doing it can be a benefit if you're in the position of being a problem solver. However, you may get exhausted and need a time when you can shut this off. When I ask people, what do you do to quiet your mind? I hear, I sleep, I do yoga. One man in the back of the room shouted out, I drink. We could do all kinds of things to intentionally shut off this obsessive noise. Well, if we give this thought process a problem to solve that's unsolvable, such as, my mortgage is more than the value of my house, how do I solve this problem? Other than walking away from the house or paying the mortgage until somehow the market turns around, we could obsessively think until it just about drives us crazy. Because this particular thought process is systemic in nature. All, nothing, right, wrong, win, lose. When something doesn't fit, it needs to fix it. It has to be right about that. And it doesn't matter whether it's the topping on a pizza or whether it's whether it's thermonuclear warfare. It has to be right. And like all thoughts, we can step back from this thought and choose to think differently. However, this particular thought could be one of the most difficult to step back from because it has a tendency to release all kinds of chemicals into our body, attached to the cells of our body. We feel this thought process. We don't just think it, we feel it. It feels like this is who we are. We're being threatened when someone doesn't agree with us. Now, if you've got your assessment up, take a quick look over to the right-hand side at whole and complete, confident, valiant. Let's go down the bottom. How about, deliberate? Let's take a look at deliberate and peaceful and see if any of those measurements are out of balance, because what it'll tell you is if you feel strongly about an idea and someone summarily dismisses your idea or they don't agree with you, there's a very good chance that it's personal. See, when we think this much, constantly, obsessively, it engages so many of our faculties. It feels like it's us, and it's part of us, and it's personal. Someone's questioning my ability. Someone's questioning my value, my belief system. And we might get defensive or feel hurt. How often does this happen? 95% plus of the time. That's a lot of the time. Now, that also tells us one other very valuable piece of information as we start to go into this session tonight. And that is, if we take our hands and hold our palms together, those on the video can see me doing this. All of you join me. Just put your palms together, intertwine your fingers, and squeeze them together. And imagine that my left hand is a person's self-worth. My right hand is their idea. How difficult is it to point out flaws in their idea without damaging their self-worth? Nearly impossible. In other words, when we have to be right, we most likely are going to crush someone. If we're going to do that, it better be important. Very few things are that important. Some may be, but we want to be very careful not to do that intentionally. Well, those are some of the most aggressive of these thought processes. There are some that want us to avoid structure altogether. You know, that time when you say, you know, I'm going to do that tomorrow at 2 o'clock. I'm going to make those phone calls. I'm going to take care of that problem. You know, tomorrow's safe enough distance in the future. And then when we get to 2 o'clock tomorrow, we sit down to do it. We're committed. And all of a sudden, this thought process called consistent, all of a sudden wants us to remember that the laundry needs to be moved from the washer to the dryer. Mom's sick and she'll be gone later this afternoon. If I don't call her right now, I'll miss her. We start thinking of all kinds of other things to do, anything to avoid this structure. I'm smiling. I hope you're smiling too. I've been there. Anybody been there? When you're going to do one of these tasks and all this, where do these thoughts come from? These are habits of thinking that we've accumulated over a lifetime, and they have threatened to imprison our future. Well, when we take on these thought processes, that's four of the six, those are four most active. When we take on these thought processes, and we want to learn to embrace discipline and structure, just think about those two words, rules. Mandates, obedience, obey, the my way. You hear all those words that just sometimes raise the hair up on the back of our necks. Yet the truth is that often the very things that we want to create are right behind the very things that we're resisting. And we will want to embrace discipline and structure. If you're in a business for yourself, before you fire your boss, you want to make sure that you're willing to apply for the job, that you will be the one who mandates the structure and the discipline. Because success mandates structure and discipline. So let's take a look at what's really going on. Now I've done some, I don't want to say extensive research, I've done a lot of pondering on this topic. And I really have come to the conclusion that it has something to do with fear. There's a fear involved. Now in the material we talk about Josh Groban's beautiful song, Let Me Fall, and I love that song and what his message is in terms of what happens to us. And I'm going to read this to you. I just love this verse. I'll just roll to it this moment. He says, let me fall. Let me climb. There's a moment when fear and dreams must collide. Isn't that true? Here I am. I'm holding back. I'm resisting. I'm resenting. I've got this rebelliousness about doing that thing. There's a moment when fear and my dreams must collide, the fear that's holding me back from doing it. And knowing that if it's not done, my dream is not going to occur. Wow, that's a moment when they collide. The someone I am, this is when I step back, I am the observer, is waiting for my courage to take on this fear and do it anyway. The one I want, that person I want to be, the one I will become, will catch me. Well, in the book that we just finished, I tell a couple of fun stories. At least they're fun to me, just some moments of fear. I'll share just briefly a couple of them. I remember when I was in the eighth grade, there was a bully. And this bully used to pick on me. Oh, my goodness. I was kind of socially inept and a little fragile, and I was just a great target for this bully. And I decided in the summer of between the eighth and ninth grade that the solution to this problem was to join the football team. So when the fall came, about August, I joined the football team. Now, I know I played, because I still have in my chest, my big chest that I keep all my keepsakes in, I have a big W from Woodland Junior High School in Huntsville, Alabama, and it has a football on it, Woodland Junior High. I still have the jacket. The jacket's gone. I don't know what's happened to it, but I have those two pieces from the jacket. I know I played, but I do not remember a single practice or a single game. Not one. live joke that I do have a memory of these cute cheerleaders around me while I'm lying on the grass injured and everybody's worried about me. And I kind of tossed that one into the fantasy bin many, many, many years ago. Don't remember anything. When the spring came, we were invited then to start participating in high school football. And in Alabama, they do spring practice. And so my mother, she said she would take over the paper route. And I went out for spring football. And I remember a couple of weeks into this spring practice, we were running a drill. And this drill called for the guard to pull and go down the line and block a defensive end that's coming across who thinks he's unblocked, you know, salivating, ready to tackle the halfback, and boom, you blindside him with this trap block, they call it. And I was a lineman. Now, I wasn't very tall, about 5'10". I weighed about 150 pounds or so, and I was slow. So I got to play on the line. And it was soon going to be my turn to run this drill. And I remember vividly, I can picture the grass. I can see the building. I can see the blue sky. This is how many years ago? 40 years ago? More than 40 years. I still remember like it was yesterday. This was that moment when fears and dreams needed to collide. Something woke up inside of me. I was so sick and tired of being afraid. Pause with me tonight in terms of your business, in terms of relationships, in terms of your dreams. Have you been sick and tired of being afraid? In that moment, a light switch flipped. Something happened, and it was like I was 6'5" and 295 pounds. And I took my position, they hiked the ball, I rotated, went down the line, hit the defensive end so hard it knocked him on his behind. And we have to keep in mind that he'd been practicing with me for a couple of weeks. He wasn't expecting that. And the coach went nuts. He grabbed my helmet, turned me around because my name was on a piece of tape. Do that again, Blanchard. Do it again. And I got down in that three-point position, and I still felt on fire. Did it again. That day I fell in love with full-on contact in football. You can fall in love with life by going full-on, full speed in life. I would encourage you this week to try. Try a day going full speed and just see what it feels like. This is what power sessions are about, 3 times a day for 1 hour. Full speed and see what it feels like. I have to tell you the rest of the story. We moved right after we had that inner squad game, and by the way, I got to be selected. Three freshmen got to play. I got to play. It was really fun. We moved to Alabama. Senior year of high school, I was a all-conference linebacker. That was fun. Went off to college to play football. I was more like Rudy. My position in college was the bench warmer, and it was Idaho, and it was cold, and somebody did need to warm the bench. 10 years later, I went back to Colorado on business and stopped by the high school, and my mentor, Carl Sheely, had left coaching and was now the principal of Wheat Ridge Junior High School. So I drove over there and went inside the building. I said, can I see Mr. Sheely? And may I ask who's calling? I said, Dave Blanchard. And she buzzed him, and he came running out of his office, and we gave each other a big hug, and we went into his office, and I walked in, and there right above his credenza was one picture. It was an 8x10 clipping of Carl and me standing on the sidelines, and it said, Arvada West holds opponents to less than 60 yards per game for the first 3 games of the season. It was very exciting. It was my favorite clipping. And there it was on his wall. And I sat down. I kept looking up at it while he was talking. And I look up at it, and he turns around, and he looks at it, and he says, oh, you're probably wondering why I keep that there. And I was thinking, he loves me. And he said, I keep that picture on my wall to remember just how much can be accomplished with little or no talent. True story. If someone's willing to give 100%, not an ounce of embellishment, that's really what he said. My takeaway from that was it's not how fast we are. It's not how big we are. It's not how smart we are. It's not how talented we are. It's the one who's willing to finally fall, to jump. There is a time when fear and dreams must collide. And part of taking on these sabotaging thought processes that want to keep us from being disciplined and structured require that we let go of that fear. That fear keeps us in resentment, in rebellion, and in resistance. Now, I've thought about this, and I came to a conclusion. This was my conclusion. These thoughts, and we're not our thoughts, we can step back from them. When I stepped back from mine and I took a look at them, I was demonstrating rebellion and resistance and resentment. Oh, let's have a grandchild show up. How wonderful. But I was exhibiting that. That was my behavior. But why was I exhibiting that behavior? What was my thought process? What was going on? And what I came to the conclusion was this, and I want you to just play with this with me for a moment. These thought processes, so active in our mind, do not want to be interrupted. They do not want to be controlled. In other words, we've got thought processes that have been whirling around in our head like a tornado, and they have had absolute control. They have controlled the roost. And every time we go to do something about it, there is such an upheaval. The only thing we can do when we're out here is act like we're rebellious and resistant, because that's an easier thing to do than it is to take them on. Now, I wrote a paragraph in the book. I'm just going to scroll down to it because I want to read this paragraph to you. It says, the world wants a no-risk easy button, a shortcut, a safe way, and a safe place. And sometimes we do. Life is so painful, we just want to get away from it. In essence, the desire for ease, I want you to hear this carefully, the desire for ease, understand why we might feel that way, but the desire for ease, a life without pain, frustration, overwhelm, debt, and with time and financial freedom is nothing more than a desire to avoid the very structure and discipline needed to control these thought processes. I call this the upper room. Did we get that? At the foundation or core of the desire for ease is a desire to avoid the work that takes courage, the work of disciplining our mind so that we can move forward with passion, fully engaged in the work of physical creation. This is the hard thing, the critical, pivotal moment. Perhaps the real moment of truth on this journey we call life. This is the moment of decision from which we want to escape when we choose to engage in fantasy instead of creation. Oh, I take you into this place in the mind. I want to tell you what happened when I went there. Now, this is all metaphorical. But I want you to imagine that you're in a house and you're climbing up these stairs and you come to the top floor and you open the door and you peek inside and there's a tornado going on inside this room, and there are things whirling around in this tornado, and there's ghost-like faces and voices. If I were to identify what some of those were, there was a refrigerator in there, swirling around in this darkness, and I'm thinking, I wonder if that's representative of what happens to me late at night when Ramon and I are watching a movie, and I just want to munch on something. Anybody have one of those things in their life, late night munchies, and they put on a few extra pounds? That was one of them. Another one was the treadmill. The treadmill spinning and swirling around, turning my life upside down. What's swirling in your upper room? I saw the scrolls. The greatest salesman doing the same thing. When I reached out to grab it, my computer almost cut off my hand. I'm thinking, what is that? Now, keep in mind, I'm writing this, seeing this visual in my mind, going, what is that? It's my computer saying, check my emails, check Facebook, do anything but read this. Anybody tried to read the scrolls 3 times a day lately? What shows up? What thought processes are screaming, I don't have time, I'm so busy, I got so much going on? If we step back from this room and said, what is that all about? You mean I don't have 4.5 minutes to prepare myself to be conscious for this entire morning or at noon? I don't have 4.5 minutes to be totally conscious for the afternoon. Can you imagine the truth of it? These thought processes do not want to be interrupted. They have been swirling without discipline and without structure for years, and we're all of a sudden becoming aware and saying, stop, which we can. And metaphorically, all that stuff comes crashing to the ground. In the book, I write about this ghost-like figure that stands up and says, so you think that you're going to take over this space? And I'm thinking, wow, I can't just do this once. I'll need to show up differently in this space. Because these thought processes will talk me out of everything required to succeed. Reading scrolls so that I'm conscious, doing power sessions, listening to understand, using my mind constructively. All of these pieces, they'll talk me out of it. It may be time for us to see this room for what it is. And next time, you're going to follow through and read a scroll, and you hear the noise, you get to ask yourself, am I going to be in charge of this room? Or are these thoughts? They've been running my life, and for some of us, running it into the ground. Let us choose to jump. Let us choose to be that courageous one, because when we do, the one we will become will catch us. I want to give you 3 specific things tonight to work on this week. The first one, you're doing power sessions. And as you're doing power sessions, you're going to be scheduling 3 things in the morning. That's what you've been doing, choosing 3 times during the day when you really want to be present. Might be a meeting, might be phone calls you're making, might be time with a family or a friend. This week, I'd like to encourage you to do one more thing. I'd like you to pick what we call a big ugly. A big ugly. These are those things we've been putting off. I've been pondering tonight. I've got a couple of these. I'm going to do this with you. You want to take a big ugly? That's something that takes more than an hour or two to complete. might take 4 or 5 or 6. And we're going to break it down into one-hour sessions, bite-sized pieces, and schedule it in advance. Today is Tuesday night, so there'll be one on Wednesday, one on Thursday, one on Friday, one on Saturday, for an example. And once it's scheduled, be prepared, because these thought processes are going to want you to be exhausted tomorrow based on something that's scheduled on Friday. So let all that go. Be present in the now. And take on the first piece. If you're cleaning a garage, break it into sections. If you're doing your tax return, make tomorrow the day you gather everything up. And once it's gathered, task accomplished, and you can feel a sense of accomplishment instead of that guilt we've been feeling by putting off the big ugly. The next day, when you're doing your power sessions, one of them will be in to do another part of that task. That piece is all that is scheduled that day. When it's done, another sense of accomplishment. Third day, fourth day, fifth day. And pretty soon it's an accomplished deed. If we don't do this, we're going to keep saying, well, let's do that on Saturday when we have more time and energy. Let me do that tomorrow morning when I don't have so much going on. And what happens is when we get to tomorrow morning or next Saturday, there's a lot of other things happening, and we just keep putting those things off and putting them off and putting them off. Let's take on a big ugly this week. And next Tuesday night when we meet, let's celebrate a sense of accomplishment. Each day we get a piece of it. It feels really good. It's wonderful for self-esteem. And next Tuesday, that big task could be off of our plate. So that's our big uglies. The next one. These thought processes process in all or nothing, win or lose, life or death, right and wrong. And when they are running our lives, we can get engaged in that process as well. There's a very good chance that somebody close to you has experienced this thought process. So tonight, we have a special power session for you to engage in this week. Now, some of you I know have been with us for several months. You've done this before. This would be an opportunity to go back to that person and check in and see how you're doing. Or pick another person and do it with them. I was in a coaching session with a client. Let's see, today that would have been, I don't want to turn to Ramona because she'll know who I'm talking, Monday. It was yesterday at 1:30. And we picked three people, and we chose the order in which they would be approached. He's only going to do one this week. I'll ask you to do one this week, just one. This is a person who's been adversely impacted when we've allowed one of these right-wrong thought processes to be in control. And this is how it works. You can find this in the material. If you're just here as a guest, just make some notes. You're going to ask for a time to meet with this person. You want to have enough time to have a conversation. When you sit down, this is what you'll say. Something like this. I have been in a coaching session, and I discovered that I have some thought processes that are really quite busy. And when I listen to those thought processes, there's a risk that I might need to be right. Can you hear the gentleness with which I'm talking? I would appreciate your assistance. What is it like for you to be in a relationship with me when I listen to those thought processes and need to be right? What's that like for you? And then for those of you watching this on video, you see, you lean in. I really want to know. Now, if we have been really abusive with this thought process, the person may be a little uncomfortable talking to us. And so we'll want to create a safe place because we really want to know. This is a great service to a person. And they go, well, I really haven't experienced that. You might hear that. It's possible. Or they might say something like, well, you know, last Thursday, you said the following to me. And your thought process is going, that's not what I said. Well, that's not what I meant. Bite your tongue. This is a power session. You're in their world. You just want to hear what kind of experience they're having. You do not share this. What you're thinking, you just want them to share what it was like. This is for them to share their experience, for you to honor what it's like for them. And they share. Is there anything else you'd like to share? And then you end with this. I'll be working on that one. I'll be working on that one. Now make a note on your paper, write 24-7, 24-48, sorry, 24-48. The phone was ringing and distracted me for a moment. 24-48. What that means is the next 24 to 48 hours, there's a very good chance that if they've said something that pushes one of these little buttons and our mind starts stewing, it's got to fix it, it's got to fix it, it's broken, it's got to fix it. The world is on tilt. That's not what I said. That's not what I meant. Can you hear the thought process just churning and churning and churning and churning? And we may be tempted to find one of those moments where we sit down with them and say, you know, I really appreciate our conversation last night. That's one of the best conversations we've ever had. The only thing that concerned me was, and watch us surrender to this thought process, and it's a passive-aggressive need to be right. The only thing that concerned me was, you mentioned last Thursday that I said this. That's not really quite what I said. What I said was, what I meant was, and I feel really bad that you had to feel so bad about it all that time. Fix, 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 fix. Can you feel it? Just let it go. This will be an opportunity, one, for you to see how difficult it is to let go of things. Two, this is a very high level of intrinsic validation. We're asking for another person's experience and honoring their right to have it, even though we may take it personally. Do your best not to. This isn't about you. This is about what happens when you surrender and listen to one of these sabotaging thought processes. So have some fun with this and see what you can discover. So the first one, let's take a big ugly and break it into bite-sized pieces. Have a sense of accomplishment each day. And next Tuesday, we get to celebrate that big ugly that's been completed. Two, let's set up one power session this week with someone who might have been adversely impacted when we listen to a thought process that needs to be right, so that we can validate their experience. Now, I have to tell you, I collect emails on this topic. You want to have the experience, send me one, dave@augmandino.com. If there could be tear stains on emails, there would be tear stains on some of these. What some people discover is quite frightening. Like, I was going to leave you. It was getting so bad. And all of a sudden, we get to mend relationships. I can tell you right now, the number one cause of divorce in this nation is not finances. It's needing to be right. Needing to be right. Now, some people might say, well, I am right. And I get to say, so what? As I mentioned earlier, when we point out flaws, we crush people. When we need to be right, someone else needs to be wrong. We crush people. Well, lastly, one last exercise. Now, this works really well in business. It can work in a close relationship as well. It's an opportunity for us to break free of this thought process that doesn't want to lose control and do something that's very intrinsic, this valuing of another human being. It's called looking for good in somebody else's idea. Now imagine, you're talking to someone. You feel really strongly about a topic. And they feel really strongly about the topic. You have one approach, they have a different approach. Og says the greatest secret of success in all ventures is love, agape love, a heightened level of awareness. So we step back from our thought processes, and from this position of agape love, we say, I'm really attached to this, aren't I? I'm going to look for good in their idea. Now watch this thought process go, no, don't do it. They'll think you agree with them and you won't get your way. Just wait for it to scream. Step back anyway. And begin to look for what's good. You don't agree with their idea. You're just looking for what's good. I've shared this before. It's a little bit like trying to find an avocado in an avocado tree. Remember in California we had avocado trees, and you go to pick an avocado and you go under the tree and you're looking for one and you can't see one anywhere. You're looking and looking, and all of a sudden you see one. And when you see one, you'll see 100 of them. They're so beautifully camouflaged. And so it is with good ideas when we need to be right about ours. When we see a good idea, then verbalize this. You know, what I like best about your idea is, and then share. Why is it so powerful? Remember, a person's idea is inextricably connected to their self-worth. For those of you on the phone, I'm again squeezing my palms together, intertwining my fingers. Inextricably connected. You find good in a person's idea, and you just found good in the person. You are now a safe place, and walls of resistance can begin to come down. And all that cooperation and productivity, which they've been holding back in reserve, can start to flood out. Two things will happen. One, just like the avocado tree, when you find one good idea, you might find two and three and four and be surprised. Wow, where did all these good ideas come from? And two, you're going to have an opportunity to share your ideas. You know what I like best about that idea is this. What would you think if we took that and then we put this little twist on it, and pretty soon there's a compromise. We might not get 100% of what we wanted, but better to have agreement. Now, if you do this with a team, it can be extremely powerful. Let's say, for an example, we have a team. And I'm just going to choose some names. Let's say Sally and Jack and Bill. Okay? If you're leading the discussion, pick one agenda item, just one. Go into the meeting, and you turn to Sally, and you say, Sally, today I'd like to discuss this agenda item. Do you have any ideas for how we could best handle that situation? And then you're open. You lean in. Sally begins to share. You take notes. When Sally's done, we turn over to Jack. Jack, what did you like best about what Sally just shared? And then, Bill, what did you like best about what Sally just shared? Then you share what you like best about what Sally shared. Then we turn to Jack. Jack, what did you like best? Same exercise. Then with Bill. Bill, what did you like best? Or what would you do? Excuse me. What would you do? By the time we're done with Sally's ideas and everybody validating the best, with Jack's idea and everybody validating the best, and Bill's idea and everybody validating the best, we may discover that the ideas we brought to the table aren't nearly as good as those that our team had. That'd be an interesting discovery, wouldn't it? You see, in leadership today, there is a perception that the leader not only gives direction, but they must also have all of the answers. I would tell you that a great leader doesn't have all the answers, but they model the process for finding them. Everybody got that? A leader directs the process for finding them. And in honoring their team and this rich resource they have in these people, and their sense of ownership in the idea, leaders could stop pushing ropes. The leader who thinks they must have all the ideas is viewing their staff as a robot. You do, you do, you do, you do. Opposed to engaging them in the very process. It's my experience that they often have the very best ideas. And what a relief for a leader to not have to know everything, just to know how to facilitate a process that would create the answer. So this week, catch yourself listening. You know what I like best about that idea is this. And watch the discernible shift in energy. If you have a team, encourage them all to participate in that exercise and see how rich it can be. When we have corporate executives do this kind of an exercise, they report back that their staff said that was the best meeting we have ever had. Let us stop pushing a rope. Let us engage people in the process and not have any fear about having to know the answers to everything. Isn't that great? So those are our exercises. We're just about out of time tonight. The big ugly. What's it been like to be in a relationship with someone who always needs to be right? And what I like best about your idea is, these are the three practices that can help us start to break the back, if you will, of these thought processes that want to control everything, who don't want to be interrupted. You could add to this, do your power sessions. Read your scrolls. Interrupt them frequently until you finally take charge of them. As I wrote earlier, this is the hard thing. This is it. The critical pivotal moment. Perhaps the real moment of truth on this journey we call life. This is the moment of decision from which we want to escape when we choose to engage in fantasy instead of creation. Tonight, let us make the decision to engage in life, to embrace these principles, to connect with people. Let go of that need to be right. Find good in people's ideas. Create value everywhere we go. And be a contributor to the world. It is so good to be with all of you. In terms of a scroll for the night, there are a couple that you might consider. One would be scroll number 9, I'll act now, that we were reading as part of the power sessions. Another could be scroll number 3, I'll persist until I succeed. Another is I'll be the master of my emotions. Weak is he who allows his thoughts to control his actions. Strong is he who forces his actions to control his thoughts. Let us begin the journey of being the master of our thoughts, the master of our emotions, the captain of our destiny. Well, thanks, everybody. We'll look forward to being with you next Tuesday night for another celebration of life. Good night, everyone.